Hello, and welcome to the Empowerography Podcast. This is a platform created for women's voices to be heard and a place to share their stories, journeys, and successes with the world for the purpose of helping other women who might be on similar journeys. We are empowering women one episode at a time. I'm your host, Brad Walsh, so kick back, grab one of your favorite beverages, and enjoy the stories. The world needs to hear your message and your story, so don't deny the world of that gift within you that the universe has given you. Someone out there needs to hear your story because it will support them in feeling hope, inspired, and even transformed. Do you want to discover how I help get my clients out of their own way, show up, and confidently share their message? I would love to extend an invitation to you to join me in my free masterclass, Start Your Own Podcast from Idea to Implementation, on Wednesday, April 5th at 1 p.m. Eastern. You can find the registry link in the show notes. Hope to see you there. Hello there, Brad Walsh here, your host of the Empowerography Podcast. Today, my guest is Lisa Benson. Lisa is an award-winning author who also helps women find their voices. Welcome, Lisa. I am so happy to have you here and grateful. Thank you for taking and making the time to be here with me today to share a little bit about your journey, your story, and the beautiful light you put out into the world through the work that you're doing. How are you today?
Thank you, Brad. I'm doing very well. Bright and early for me, but yeah.
Yes.
Excited to be here with you. It's a great conversation.
I appreciate you getting up so early in the morning to do this interview with me. So with that being said, let's jump right in. I guess the first thing I'd like to know is and ask you is, has writing always been part of who you are? Or is this something that is a fairly new path for you? And how long have you been writing? And what was the inspiration for you to get into the world of writing and becoming an author?
Wow, that's a big one. And I think writing actually begins with reading. I think as a child, I was one of those kids who loved books and I loved reading. So I think that's where the original love came for words and stories and things like that. And I loved English and was always one of the top students and had this love for language and in English. But I also wanted to write a book. Like Charlotte's Web was my favorite book as a child. So it was just like this inspiration and just this beautiful story. And I thought as a dream, I'd love to write a story that would inspire people. So it's kind of been a long held sort of fantasy, but the reality part of it and sort of the more real part of it was that in 2015, an offer came up for my husband for a job. And I was in a job that I'd been in for, oh gosh, I think it was 13 years and I was unfulfilled and I was just there for the wrong reasons. Like I loved the people that I worked with, but I wasn't fulfilled and I wasn't stretching myself. And so, but in him taking that job, we had massive discussions about it and it would mean leaving my job. And so he came up with the idea that wouldn't this be a great opportunity for you to pursue this dream of writing a book? So that was just like so amazing for me. And it just was like this synchronicity between us. And then, yeah, so probably for 8 or 9 years, I've been doing this as a full-time exercise. And it took over 5 years to write my book, Where Have I Been All My Life? It grew up after a life of putting up, giving up and shutting up. So that's a whole journey in itself.
Which we'll talk about.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think that's where a lot of people start with the writing is the reading. I know I was an avid reader as a kid as well. And I remember Charlotte's Web, but my favorite book as a kid was Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, yes.
I love that book.
I read that one as
I don't
well.
Even know how many times.
That's it. The pages become all yellow and crumpled because you've read it so many times.
Yeah, absolutely. What is it, Lisa, that excites and inspires you the most about writing and being an author?
Oh, my goodness. Just connecting with so many people around the world through conversations like this. If I wasn't a writer, I wouldn't be having this conversation. But also helping people. I think a lot of people do write because they've struggled themselves and they want to share those things and help other people with what they've gone through. It's for me, it's again, we'll get into the story a little bit later, but I don't have any children myself. So it's also a legacy for me. It's kind of that thought, like the Indian proverb, that you're planting a seed of a tree that you're never going to sit under. So it's a contribution thing for me too. It's so exciting to think that I can write something that even when I'm not here in this physical world, that someone may benefit from it and I'll never know that. But isn't that a beautiful thing?
It's beautiful and incredibly powerful.
I agree.
To know that words you wrote down on a page live on far after you have gone and will benefit someone else down the line.
That is very exciting. That's what helps me, motivates me every day.
On the flip side of that coin, Lisa, what would you say is one of the most challenging parts about writing and being an author?
Oh, wow. Probably dealing with the imposter syndrome and the self-doubt, because I think some people think that they're doing something wrong because this is part of the journey. But I think it is every writer and every author, I think, has that feeling at some stage. And obviously we go through flows of writing, but then the writer's block is also a big problem. But it's, again, a universal issue, I'm sure. But It is, it's part of the process. I think that's, yeah, they're the biggest ones probably for me.
A perfect segue into how do you deal with those creative blocks when they do come up? Because they come up for everyone who is artistic. The creative blocks are going to pop up from time to time. So how do you deal with them? And what have you found helps you the most when those blocks come up?
Yes. So it's changed. So in the beginning, when I had writer's block, I felt like a failure, and I'm coming from a perfectionist, reforming perfectionist now. But when I started, I was still struggling with all that. It has to be perfect. And why can't I do this? And instead of letting the process happen. So it was very frustrating, and there were lots of tears. So that's very normal as well. But now I don't force it. And sometimes I'll be writing in the middle of the night or for 12 hours in a row, or it might be 1 hour. And then I think, well, this is not working. So go for a walk or meditate. And Meditation is actually really good for my pre-writing process, I suppose. I meditate for about 23 minutes and call in the messages that I'm meant to bring in, that I'm meant to share with the world, burn some Palo Santo and just get myself into that. This is of service and what is meant to be coming out. And the last line in my acknowledgements of my book is, I thank the universe for helping me bring this book into my being, because at the end of every meditation, I say, help me bring this book into my being, because it is about getting the messages that are meant for not just for me and helping me on my own journey, but for everyone. So yeah, I'd say walking is helpful, meditation is helpful, but also not forcing it to happen when it's just not flowing. Just let it be.
Yeah, I love that you said that, because so many people will try and push through and force that creativity to come through, whatever art form it is that you're practicing, whether it be painting, photography, writing. People try and force it and you can't. It's just not going to come out, or what you expect is not going to come out. You're not going to be happy with it. You have to let it flow. So for me, I found too, just getting up, like you said, getting up, leaving the space wherever it is you're working, get into a different headspace, go for a walk, whatever it is, but just step away.
I agree. And every time I write something now, the same thing happens. And it's funny, but it's not funny. But it's this is crap. This is not going to work. No one's going to want to read this. And then you massage it into this piece that then you're proud of. And I think it was Ryan Holiday the other day. I read something on social media and he said something like, artists love to paint, but writers love when something is written. So it's like this struggle of actually doing it, but the satisfaction and the fulfillment that comes when you've finished a piece and when you have it refined and it has a universal message, that's where the satisfaction comes, I think, for a writer. It is hard and painful and struggling as you're doing it, but when you get that voice right and you say what you want to say, I think that's an absolutely beautiful result.
And when you're writing, where do you pull your inspiration from?
Wow. Everywhere, to be honest. It's one of the things about being a writer that you never stop. I think the main inspiration is from the things that I've struggled with. As I said, it's like this whole, I want to help people, even though we can't help other people, we can't stop other people from going through things, we can help them on the journey to know that it's normal. So I think mainly it's from issues that I've had myself, but I think it's also from childhood. I think our childhood shapes who we are. So I think if we merge the inspiration between what's happening now and look at things from our childhood, and I do that in my story as well, is you might be here, but there's a backstory of to why you feel this way or that you're in this position. And I think I'm writing always. I've always got notes everywhere and I wake up with thoughts. It's kind of like the curse of the writer is that you just never stop. I'm in the shower sometimes and I'll jump out and write 100 words or 1,000 words and dictate because I'm dripping wet in my towel, but I've got to get this thought out because it's going to be lost. So, yeah, I mean, I could go on forever, but yeah, it is funny. Yeah.
As a writer, what do you know now that you wish you knew when you first started out?
Oh, that I wish I first knew when I started out is probably that the first draft doesn't have to be perfect. That just let it go, just get all the information out, and you waste so much time editing and doing the grammatical things on all the stuff that gets, I wrote 400,000 words to get my 67,000. So all wow. that, if I, yes, it took a long time, but it was very cathartic. But what I'm trying to say is if you're editing that 400,000 words, it's, you're wasting so much time. All that, mm-hmm. you would need to get to the actual message. So that's probably the biggest thing that I wish I would have known and that I will pass into my next book, is that just get it all out and then worry about what's going to be in there and then do the perfectionist editing. And you can get help with that as well.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Which authors do you admire? Who are a couple of your favorites, Lisa?
I have a mission to read 50 books this year, so that's just a side issue. But there's so much variety in what I read, a lot of self-help. I love Don Miguel Ruiz. The Four Agreements is one of my mm-hmm. favorite books. I've read yeah. it over and listened to it over and over. I do love Elizabeth Gilbert, Big Magic with her creativity, and Eat, Pray, Love, seriously one of my favorite books, and inspired me with how she shared that story and made into a movie. And so I love her work, and City of Girls, her fiction as well. In terms of when, as I was writing my book, I read a lot of self-help. There was lots of research involved, and Mark Wallen's It Didn't Start With You was a great one, transformed a lot of the ways I was thinking about intergenerational trauma mm-hmm. and the impacts of previous generations. So you need to stop me because I can just keep going on and on about
books. Have you read Don Miguel Ruiz's son's book, The Five Agreements? Because there's another agreement.
Yes, I have got that one as well. Yeah, yes, yeah, I love that yeah. one as well. Yes, yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I love it.
Very.
Yeah. Yeah. Very
now, as a creative yourself, I always ask creatives this question because I think it's interesting to hear the different answers I get. So do you think that we are all born with innate creativity? And I think about this a lot myself when it comes to athletes, musicians, artists. There are people that are just born with that natural ability. Like you can tell, like the Beethovens, the Picassos, the Jimi Hendrixes, all of those who are, they almost have an unearthly talent. You'd think that they came out of the womb with a paintbrush or a piano or a guitar or whatever mm-hmm. the case may be. They are born with that. But for most of the population, it's something that has to be worked at, practiced and honed, that skill set. So I'm always curious, do you think that the people, the majority of the population, is it possible for them through practice and all of the things to achieve that high level of skill as those people? I mean, and that's not to say that they don't have to practice. Of course, they practice as well, but it almost seems like it's a little less effort needed to become that level of artist or talent. Do you think it's possible for the rest of the population to reach that level of talent?
There's so much. There's a lot there, Brad. You've just brought up so much, but I know what I'm trying to say, but there's just so many aspects of what you just said. So people are born, I believe everyone is born with creativity. We're all creative, and seeing children and watching them play. And so there is definitely some people in their DNA have this extraordinary talent that is effortless. But my honest belief is that every single person is born with beautiful creativity and a unique creativity, which may be, as you said, in singing or art or photography or whatever it is. And I know it's like a cliche, but I use the analogy of, if you said to me, and I'm not a piano player, you need to learn how to play the piano by the end of the year, and I practiced 5 or 10 hours a day, I will know how to play the piano and I'll be able to play a beautiful tune. And maybe if I practice 12 hours a day or 15 hours a day, I'll be really great at it. So I think, and using my writing as an example, is it was a passion of mine and I thought I was better at it than I was at the time. When I went to the first writing retreat in Fiji, I took 16,000 words thinking, oh yeah, puffy chest, this is going to be published next year and I'm so good. And oh my goodness, did I get knocked down? But that is the whole process of the creativity. My husband says it's like an apprenticeship. You're learning how to write. So I had to go through all the courses and learn. And a lot of my learning was not about structure and plot, and a lot of it was, but the main part for me was the consciousness of the writing and the journey, the parallel journey that I had to go on myself to be the author that wrote this book. Because I talk about this a lot, that I wrote the book that I needed to read. Because I think a lot of the times when we're grappling with something, that's when we're writing and we're trying to process it and work it out. So if I'm going back to the original question, I think it's conditioned out of us, Brad. I think we're told to be studious and we have to get education in, you know, a very specific way. Whereas if we nurtured the beautiful creative gifts that we have, there'd be a lot more creative people in the world, and it wouldn't be so, that's a bit of a woo-woo thing on the side. It'd be more normal and natural for a lot of people.
Yeah, I agree with you. The whole conditioning thing, there's so many things that we are conditioned with, and this speaks to the education system. The Rockefellers designing that system to create worker bees. That's all they wanted. They don't want creative people that think outside the box, because then they cannot control and indoctrinate those people.
Yes.
So you're right. It is. Yeah, very true. In your personal journey, how did you discover the power of your own voice, and what obstacles did you overcome to find and embrace it?
Oh dear. My voice, I had no voice. So I think through the writing, I discovered how much it had actually been pushed down and how much I'd been made small. And as you mentioned, the conditioning and that societal, the patriarch, I felt like I was brainwashed, and I didn't even know that I was being brainwashed because it was so indoctrinated from a child in movies and media and just the way of life and just the interactions. And I know it is changing, but finding my voice has been pretty much a lifelong thing for me. And it's only happened in my mid-40s, was probably as I was finishing writing the book, some things happened in my life where I actually, and we try, and this is the whole thing, that some advice for people is it doesn't happen overnight. It is a journey to get to this point, and you try and use your voice, and then you push down again, and then you try and use your voice. So what it is about going through that process, but I think age is also a thing. Like we get to the point and we go, hang on a minute. We realize, hang on, all this time I've done everything to please everyone else. And then you get that confidence to say what you really feel. But some of the times where I have actually spoken up and used my voice, I was shamed, I suppose. And it's that whole good girls aren't supposed to speak up and you're seen and not heard and all
that. Stay there and be quiet. Just sit over there.
Goodness. And it's terrible because, as I said, I was one of the people that didn't even, I just went along with this whole paradigm and didn't even realize how much. So writing the story, and that's why it took so long too, because I had to process all that and it was painful. And it's also painful to know what you've missed out on and what you have been through. But in showing that to other people, hopefully that helps. But the advice that I would give about finding your voice is that it's unique to everyone, and it is a process, and it's just about getting that confidence and building that confidence little bit by little bit until I never thought I would tell the story that I have told into that in a little bit, but I don't want to deviate too much from the question, but but it has been very hard for me. But if everyone knows that it's going to be hard and just works through it, I think that's probably the best advice.
Thank you for sharing that. Stories have the power to shape perspectives. How do you see storytelling as a means of influencing societal narratives and challenging stereotypes, particularly concerning women?
Yes, it's definitely a way, because what it does, it shows a different perspective sometimes. And I think there's a ripple effect with, if one person gets the confidence to share their story, then someone else will get the confidence. And that, I've seen that happen already. And I think for me personally, in my story, I have a few things that are against the societal norm and hopefully will shape future generations and get the conversations going, because I'm 50 this year and I have no children. I didn't get married until I was 43, and I achieved my dream of writing a book, I think I was 47 or 48 when it was published. So it's not this, you have to be married at 20 and have a child in your late 20s. And if you're by 30, you're on the shelf, and that really has to change. And it is, we do laugh at it, but it is, it's such a feeling. And I see women struggling and in pain and looking for a man who will have a baby with them instead of being fulfilled within themselves first, then finding a partner. And then the third decision should be, is it right for us to have children? I feel that me sharing my story and showing a different narrative may be helpful for young people as well as older people. So many older people are resonating with the story more than I thought, actually, because it's giving an insight. But that's, I think shaping that is about sharing and the ripple effect. I think that's probably the main point of that.
You've gone against the grain with three big beliefs and societal conditioning beliefs, and having children by a certain age, being married by a certain age, and being well established in your business or career by a certain age. You've just blown everything, all three of those out of the water.
I have. I certainly have. Yes.
You should be very proud of that.
Thank you, Brad. Yeah. And there's a lot, as I said, you have to read my story to get the full picture. But yeah, the struggles in the beginning in relationships and being stuck in those coercive, controlling relationships and the perfectionism and how that held me back is all a big part of getting to the point of standing up, talking about it and making a change.
Your writing empowers women. So how do you believe the act of writing can be a transformative tool for women seeking to express themselves and assert their identities?
Yeah, I covered that a little bit probably in what I was saying before, but just the act of writing down, and as I said, the 400,000 words for me was...
I can't believe that, 400,000.
I know. There's probably more. That's just what I counted. So, but it's like a journal. It's like what you're doing is you're pouring your heart out and you're taking it off your shoulders. And sometimes when we're, and I know the pain of suppression, and when we can't get our story out or when we don't feel like we're being heard, it's actually toxic and unhealthy for our bodies as well. So just the act of writing it down and expressing it, even if it's to a page, then you can look at it and you can and feel whether it's the truth, and you can then massage it to the point of, but hang on a minute, what is other people's perspective of this? And you end up being a little bit more compassionate and taking responsibility, I think. So by writing it down and seeing it in front of you, instead of having these thoughts ruminating in your head and the same things over and over, you're actually getting a bit of clarity. So I think it is helpful for anyone. And I believe that writing my book, and it wasn't sold as in a brochure that it's like therapy, but for me it was like therapy. And I feel like I went through 5 or 6 years of therapy. So it's such a beautiful process that
healing.
I can't, yeah. It's so healing. It's been so, if I never sold one book, and I went through that, my life changed from just the writing. And since then, I've had friends who have read the book and left, say, a 20-something year relationship because they didn't realize what they were putting up with. Because I've spent so much time, and maybe because I haven't got my own children, that I was able to do this a little bit younger than some women and actually process all that. So maybe that's a positive as well, that I've been able to do a lot of research and reading and processing to be able to help others. And but I think anyone who writes, it's therapeutic.
And of course, vulnerability plays a big part in all of this and can be a source of strength. How do you encourage women to embrace vulnerability in their writing, and how does it contribute to the authenticity of their voices?
Oh, I love this. Vulnerability it's my superpower now. But it was what I did not want to do. I did not want to be vulnerable. That's why I struggled a lot. I don't think we can tell women how to be vulnerable. I think we have to show them. I think by me showing how, and I was at school called Little Miss Perfect. So for Little Miss Perfect, I know, and again, it's ridiculous, but it's just that conditioning again. Mm-hmm. So for Little Miss Perfect to be as vulnerable as I have been, and some of the things that I reveal in my story, I promised I would never reveal. I was going to take them to my grave. The thought of even putting them down on paper for anyone to ever see was petrifying for me. So that's the level of change and the level of vulnerability that I do get to. And so many people that read my book say it's very brave, and they repeat it. They say that is very brave. But for me, it doesn't feel that way anymore because it's freeing. And that's the thing, that the process of showing up and being vulnerable is hard and it does take time. But once you get there's this lightness that comes with it that is indescribable. And I think showing the journey, and as I said, you can't tell people what to do, but showing them what you've done is helpful, because you can't be authentic unless you are vulnerable and show, because we all have weaknesses and scars and wounds, and we've made mistakes and we've got shame. So if more people show that instead of the social media reel of just the highlights and all that, I think that makes us all more authentic and more real.
You're right. We have to lead by example. We have to, you can say the words to try and get someone to embrace vulnerability, but it's leading by example that gives others, that's a permission slip for others to do the same when you do that, when you lead by example. Writing, of course, as you've said, is a very healing process. How do you see the act of writing contributing to the emotional and the psychological well-being of women who engage in the process?
It's so healing. It's taking away something that is stuck inside us, and it's expressing it. And I think the pain of holding all this stuff in is, as I said, it's very unhealthy to hold it in. So the biggest healing journey that I went on was writing this book and telling the stories. It just blows me away the difference that can happen just by expressing and being heard. And when people hear what you've got to say, and it's interesting because there's credibility comes when you're the same person, but when you have written something down, you gain credibility. So then that's where it becomes healing, because it does have the ripple on effect and make change, hopefully.
Yeah.
Positive change in the world.
Now, writing, as you said, writing that story was incredibly hard and painful at times. And so that discomfort, growth obviously comes from stepping out of our comfort zones and stepping into those uncomfortable areas. We grow when we do that. And of course, sharing our stories is like bearing our souls, or it could be compared to standing naked on a stage in front of people, right? Because you're completely letting it all out. You're sharing everything. How do you encourage women to embrace discomfort in their writing, allowing them to explore and express aspects of their experiences that may be challenging?
Again, it's that don't expect it to happen straight away kind of thing. It's just don't think that I'm going to read a book or wake up one morning and I'm going to grow and I'm going to be free and I'm healed, and because it is, as we know, it's a lifelong thing. But when I was in Fiji and at the writing retreat, and my mentor said, write down the things that you would never write about, and I didn't write it down because I wasn't ready. You can't push people to be ready to do these things and to grow, but you can show them again that if you do these things, there will be a positive result over time. It's just a matter of feeling what you're ready to do and when you're ready to do it, because it's hard because you're going through everything. When you write, you're going through the emotions of a situation again. So, and again, it's funny now, but it's not funny when it's happening. You're reliving it. My husband used to come home and he does this joke and he puts his foot in the door and says, I didn't know which Lisa I was going to come home to. Was she reliving the death of her father or her toxic relationships or the happiest day of her life? So it's because when you are, you have to get the emotion into the writing. Yeah. So when you're in there, you're sort of, your heart starts racing because if you're thinking about this horrible thing, so you embody what you're writing about. So to grow, you have to go, I might be diverting a little bit here, but for transformation, it has to be hard and there has to be a struggle and it has to be painful. There has to be tears. People think that they can just they're transformed, but there's not. And I talk about this in one of the anthologies that I'm in, it's the Hindu goddess Kali energy. It's this whole, we have to break down and destroy the soil that is all this stuff is in to get fertile soil for the new you. So it's about growth, is about going through it and not saying, well, I'm avoiding that. People think sometimes when they're avoiding something that they've healed from it, and there's a difference between dealing with something and healing from it. So
it'll
come up
later on down the road.
It will. So that's the thing I think with growth, is that it is a process that, if we all just think it's going to be painful at times, but it's how wonderful to get through that. I think that's probably the best advice with growth.
Yeah. I interviewed a woman recently and she wrote her first book and she was talking about the process of writing. Her story is just unbelievable, but she was talking about the process of writing her book. And she said it was one of the hardest things she's ever had to do in her life, because she had to get back into those memories and relive them, as we were just saying. But she said she was so into what had happened that she transported herself back and she could picture and feel the carpet underneath her feet as a kid. She could smell the smells in the room. Like it was that
strong
lived beings. Like it was just unbelievable.
If you watched a writer, and I know I can just imagine myself sitting there, and you kind of like shapeshift into something, and then you just like, okay, and you're breathing, and then you really do, you pretend you're there and you pretend the words are coming out. And one of an example, and it's not someone I know, but my mentor gave an example of someone else who struggled in that way, and she said, I don't know if I can write my memoir because I don't think I can go back there. And she said, do I really have to go back there? And she said, I'm afraid you do. You have to go back there, because you can't convey emotions to someone else unless you're feeling them yourself. I think she said something like, no tears in the writer, no tears in the reader. It's, you have to feel that really strongly to be able to pass it on. And it's not, that's when I naively thought, oh yeah, I can just write a book. It's, there's so much, it's undervalued, I think. It's so much goes into the transformation that goes into writing a book. I think is, I value every book that I read now, and I don't take for granted how much has gone into each page and appreciate
it. Well, being
it.
Able to do that as a writer just expresses the authenticity in the story, in the situations that you're relaying through your words.
It
does. You have to be able to do it. Unfortunately, for some of the situations, some of the things that writers share, horrific situations, but you have to go back to it in order to display that authenticity and get the emotion across in that.
That's a good point. And there's also one extra thing is that you don't have to share everything in the story either. So that's why I say with a 400,000 word, there's a lot of, again, because we have been suppressed, especially women, for so long, and we want to be heard. So we have all this stuff to say, but everything doesn't need to be said. So a lot of my, I had 18 months of just refining that last draft to get to the point where, you know, that doesn't need to be said. Is that my ego? Is that me wanting to say this? It doesn't need to be heard. It's not going to help other people. It's not going to feel good. So I got to the point where I was very proud, and I have no regrets, and I never will have a regret of what I've put in there, because I spent so much time making sure that I had refined that, and I did it from my perspective and my feelings, not blaming other people. I took responsibility. So I think that's an important thing too, that it does take time to do all that.
For sure. Now, creativity, of course, is a powerful force. How do you believe tapping into one's creative expression, whether through writing or other forms, contributes to personal empowerment?
It's expressing yourself. It's the same thing. It's about this having a voice, and whether it is painting or photography or writing, I think it, like editing. So for me, obviously writing's having this thing you start with and then pairing it back. But for photography or painting, for example, it's like you've got something there, but you're adding with filters in photography or painting. You might start with a picture and then you'll add to it and then you'll add again. And one of my friends the other day who's an artist said there's four paintings below that painting. So it's like editing up or editing. It's just, it's the process of getting to where you want the end result to be. And it's about expression. And to have someone appreciate your artwork or your writing or your singing or whatever it is very, it's fulfilling. It's fulfilling to be appreciated. Yeah.
For sure. I remember the first time I ever sold a print to someone, and the thought just blew my mind that this person was going to hang something that I created on their wall.
Amazing, isn't it?
It's like, it is just one of the most incredible feelings, and so much gratitude for that.
That's right.
Absolutely amazing.
It's a contribution too. And that, like I said, with the writing, that photo or that piece lives on, could be forever. So it gets passed down in generations. So it's a beautiful legacy.
Mm. Yeah. So let's now talk about the book. All this talk about writing.
Oh, yes, the
going
book.
Through the process.
That thing.
that little thing
that
you
thing.
Did. But tell us about the book. I know you've alluded and mentioned it here and there, but tell us about the title. What is the subject matter of the book? Explain a little bit about that. And how cathartic was that process for you? And how hard or easy was the entire, obviously it was hard. It took you 5 years to write it, but what was the process like for you going through all of that?
It changed my life. Literally, like I said before, if I sell no books, it's the meaning of the transformation that happened for me was worth it. I've got the book here. I'm sure
there we go.
Can see, but yeah. Where have I been all my life? How I finally grew up after a life of putting up, giving up and shutting up. And I think the title is resonating with a lot of women, because haven't we all been lost and we've been shut up, as you said, quiet, and we've put up with things and we've given up. Like, women give up a lot of things for other people. And I think that each section of the book, so it's the putting up, giving up, shutting up, and then the growing up. So it's like a journey for me. And it's a story of how a smart child, Little Miss Perfect, gets into these toxic, coercive, controlling, emotionally abusive relationships. And I think that I'm so surprised. Well, I'm not surprised, but it's shocking that so many women are resonating, because we've all been through one of those relationships. Like, people say to me, oh yeah, I had one of those, or people, as I said, are in them. And it's a gentle way of showing, because when I talk about being in that and not knowing how to get out and why did I stay? So my story is from inside It's in that moment and the feelings that of I'm trapped and I can't get out, and why I'm a smart person, why am I stuck here and how did I get here and why am I putting up with this? So I think it speaks to people that have been through that as well as people that are in there. But then the journey, the inciting event for me, or the aha moment, was when my father and all of my grandparents, so four grandparents and my dad, within 3 years all passed away.
Holy
so that
shit.
Was, yeah, that was, I was in my mid 30s. So I was blessed to have all my grandparents in their late 80s. And then it just, my world was just rocked. It went from thinking that I had all this time ahead of me into, wow, like you really have to change something because you're just tumbleweeding through life. So once that happened, I left the toxic relationship. I vowed never to be in one again. And I went on this journey of self-discovery, and I learned a lot about my conditioning and intergenerational trauma and the perfectionism and all that conditioning and, as I said, the brainwashing. And so, yeah, there's a love story in there as well, but I don't want that to be the focus because it is all about self-love. It really is. Uh-huh. It's about when you find the right person, when you love yourself. So there's a whole yes. story about that. And it talks about obviously not having children and my journey, and hopefully that's empowering and healing for a lot of women who, for whatever reason, don't have their own children. So my decision was a choice. And again, there's two chapters on it, so I'm not going to go into it all here, but right. it's just, the world doesn't end if you don't have children. And now I'm enjoying, my husband has stepkids and mm-hmm. we've got grandchildren. So I'm enjoying that. So everyone's life is different and it's meant to be how it is. So I suppose that's my book in a nutshell. I think it's a lot of what a lot of women feel and have never said or have never heard someone say so vulnerably.
But see, that also, again, pieces of that speak to the conditioning where women are taught that's your purpose. You're here to have children. You're here to birth children. That's and true. That's not everyone's path. And that's no. okay. You shouldn't mm-hmm. be shamed for that. You shouldn't feel, because I've spoke to women who have had problems with infertility and things like mm-hmm. that, and they say they're made to feel like they're less of a woman because
absolutely.
They cannot birth, and I think that's terrible. And one woman explained it this way, no, I can't have kids, but I can birth other things into the world, like books,
that's
like you've done.
That's exactly
and other
right.
projects and things mm-hmm. like that, right? But also, I like that you mentioned that it all comes down to self-love, because honestly, that relationship with self is hands down the most important and longest standing relationship you will ever have in your life.
So true.
Nothing trumps that.
That's very true. Yeah. And I have an article that I wrote actually called A Childless Woman is No Less of a Woman, because I have had, and until my mid 40s, at least once a week, someone would say, oh, you don't have children. Oh, you've got, it's not too late. And without knowing anything about my circumstances, oh no. And they always give me an example of someone in their 40s that's had a baby. And it's interesting, isn't it? Why, I know they're trying to connect with me, but why it's so hard for a woman to accept another woman. And it's, again, it's, everyone's got their own perspective, but it's really hard as a woman to be in, as I said, it's lessening now as I get close to 50,
yeah.
but to be told you have to have children and it's not too late. It's like you failed, but I know
yeah.
that's not the case, but I think we need to spread that. And it is definitely improving and getting better, but it's definitely something that needs to be
worked.
It's
a conversation that needs to be continued, and it needs to have a light shone upon it, because it does need to be talked about. And women need to know that, no, you don't have to go that
no.
path.
And I love kids. I absolutely love kids. And I always thought I would. I never, ever imagined my life without children, because that was what I was told was going to happen. So, but it was more about, for me, that I wasn't in the relationship. I knew in the back of my mind that this is not going to last. So, which
yeah.
is, again, another, and I did a delve into that. I won't delve into that here, but there's all that knowing.
Your
a lot
intuition.
Of women know.
Yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. they know that they're in the wrong place, but yeah, there's so much. We could talk for hours about it.
We could. Lisa, what do you think your unique skill set or superpower is that's helped you become successful?
My vulnerability, definitely. That's definitely a superpower. And my empathy. I really do feel other people's energy. And I see, when you're in a crowd and you see someone that's alone or feels uncomfortable, I gravitate to them. I really feel other people's pain and energy. And yeah, so I definitely think that's superpower and great skill. Yeah.
Speaking of success, how do you define that word? What does the word success mean to you?
I think success is when what we are doing is for the betterment of the community or humanity. I think that is success. I think we don't realize that when we're younger, but I think that as we get older, it's about what we can contribute back. So I think that's success for me.
What would you say is one of the most important things you've learned in your life? And what was your life like before you learned it? What was your life like after learning it?
I think with, as I said, with my dad's death, I think the lesson would be that time is precious and not guaranteed, because I had these wide eyes open to, I've got all this time ahead of me, I can fix all this, and there's all this family tree above me and I have all this time. And I think that when you are faced with grief and so much death in a short period of time, that you think about your own mortality. So before that point, so before I realized that time was precious, I just literally wasted time. I was trying to be someone else. I was inauthentic. I had no direction. So I was just like fumbling through and existing, I suppose, is probably a good word. So yeah. After that, I became all the opposite. So I became a lot more focused. I knew that I was not going to put up. It was a very defining point for me. No more. I'm not going to put up with this anymore. I don't have time anymore, because if my dad at 61 can not be here, then I need to make the most and live this life to the fullest. So I think I became more authentic is probably, and again, it didn't happen. Like, I'm now authentic. It really took another decade, but
yeah,
I began to work on that. So it was definitely a change in my life completely.
It's a huge lesson. Mm, grief is a long, tough fucking road to walk.
It's so sad. That's what's upsetting for me. It's so sad that it takes a health scare or a death or something really dramatic to wake up. But we can't help that, because we don't know until we know. So it's just life.
Exactly.
The Benjamin Button. Sure. Yeah, we all need that.
Absolutely. To date, what would you say is your biggest high or your greatest win?
Being brave enough to share my story. That's it in a nutshell. It was a dream come true, but it also, as I said, changed my life.
What would you say is one of your biggest failures, or we'll call them life lessons or teachable moments? And what did you learn from it?
I think, one of the things probably was staying in relationships with men that I knew weren't the right men for me, out of fear and out of feeling like I was a failure. And there was lots of other psychological things. Like, I talk in my book about the narcissistic empath enmeshments and things like that. So the mistake was knowing that I was in the wrong place and not making a change. So I think I learned from that I had more power than I actually thought I had at the time. So I think for people going through something like that, is there is a way out and there's hope. And so that's probably one of the big things, is I learned so much from that, and it was meant for my journey, and I wouldn't be in the exact place here if I didn't go through all that. But it is, I want to definitely spread awareness to that, because there's lots of people suffering and feeling stuck in relationships that they really shouldn't be in. And so, again, I want to be a voice for that. And it's, as I said, I didn't write the book to make this change, but, one of my friends who read the book, who did not realize it's so insidious sometimes, and the manipulation and the control that women put up with, that she didn't know until she read my book, and then she had her awakening. So that's the most beautiful thing, is that makes it all worthwhile as well, just for one person have that moment where, your words land for them exactly. And you might have 10 books and then one just resonates. So I think I've gone off the track here, but
no, that's okay.
I don't know if I've answered the question.
Well, that's good. That's good. It's a conversation again that needs to be had. I mean, it's hard to get out of those situations when you're in them. And a lot of the time you can't see the forest for the trees because you're in it. It's very hard.
So well said. And that's the fear, is not knowing. You can't see. So that's why showing my story is, I show that pain and the fear of, and then the transformation of how I did it. And it's obviously not the same for everyone else, but it gives hope that there is a way out.
It's a permission slip. It shows people it is possible, for sure. What does the word empowerment mean to you?
Empowerment is having the confidence to stand in our unique power and our authenticity.
We're going to jump into a little rapid fire section here. So the next grouping of questions, just be 2-3-4 word answer type thing. Okay.
Okay. I'll do my best.
You got this. I know you
got this. Got this.
What is your personal motto?
Stop trying, start being. So that's well advertised, that one. So I spent my life doing the opposite. So that's definitely it. Stop trying, start being.
How would you describe yourself in one word?
Grateful.
If you could teach the world one thing, what would it be?
To feel worthy.
What is one thing you love about yourself that is not related to your physical appearance?
My empathic nature.
What's one thing you want but cannot buy with money?
Fulfillment.
And that concludes our rapid fire section. Now back to our regularly scheduled program. See, you did
I made it.
Good.
gosh.
What is one thing you know now that you wish you knew when you started your entrepreneurial journey?
That you can't take shortcuts. That you need to embrace the journey to get to somewhere. And like you said before, if you do a quick version of the route, you will go back. So you need
to long haul.
Yeah. You need the experience to get somewhere.
You have to play the long game for sure.
Yes.
There are no magic bullets. There's no magic pills. You got to go through it.
That's it. Exactly. What is hard.
Yeah, it is for sure. But that's part of the fun of it.
It is. It is. It's the challenge. Yeah.
And the growth.
Yeah. That's when you do see the incremental growth of you. Oh, wow, I did that. And it gives you confidence to do a little bit more. Yeah.
Absolutely. To take that next step. What is one common myth about your profession that you'd like to debunk?
I love this one. The myth is that I'm not working. So sometimes because I'm home and I'm writing and it's a judgment again and a stereotype, so I'm debunking a lot of those, is that, that I'm just doing nothing. Whereas to me, the honest truth is that it's been the hardest work of my whole life. Yeah. And the judgment from others doesn't matter, and it's not. But for me, I feel when people resonate or send me a message, or that is so fulfilling. And that's when I feel like I feel wealthy in my heart, I suppose, is a way to put it, because I'm not doing a job, traditional job, where I'm getting paid, but I'm getting paid by spreading the word and having people resonate. So I think, the judgment of that was in the beginning was hard because, again, it was early on and people would say, oh, she's retired at 40 and she's just not working. And it's that if you only knew that I'm working sometimes all through the night, and sometimes I get up at 2 o'clock and work till 7. And anyway, I don't need to justify.
How did you deal with that though? How did you get through that in the beginning?
In the beginning, I just sucked it up. Basically, I just was like, it hurt, but I knew that there was a higher power inside me, and I knew that that was for a higher reason. So I knew that in time that I would gain the respect because there was something coming out at the end of it. You know what I mean? Like, I knew that there was an end goal and I knew that I was called to do it. So there was no option. So it was empowering for me to just go, well, I don't really care what anyone else is saying and the judgments. And exactly. So it's all good.
What is your why, Lisa?
My why is to help others and to help others feel less alone. It's also to make people feel that they can be their authentic self and not have to live up to other people's expectations. So it's about, sharing my story to empower others and help others to do that.
If you could step into my shoes, what question would you have asked yourself that I didn't ask you?
Oh, my goodness. How long have we got here? No, maybe what is my next audacious dream?
There you go.
There you go. So my next audacious dream that I'm manifesting is having my book made into a movie. So, and again, to spread the word. And also I do a lot of manifesting and vision board work and things like that. And I really want to donate to Dr. Tara I. Trent International Foundation. And I just visualize handing over a check for $1 million or something. And so to do that, there's going to have to be something happening. So,
for sure.
So I'm just putting it out there into the world because I really do feel that if we picture things and visualize things, and I never thought I'd have a book published and be winning awards and all the things that have happened the whole year for me last year was a result of putting one thing in motion and then the next thing comes along. And now I'm in 6 other books. So it's just about believing in yourself to, as I said, have an audacious goal and working towards it.
So who's going to play you? Who would you like to play you in the movie?
Oh, it's written down. Kristen Davis, who was Charlotte in Sex and the City. Yeah, I've got it all every day for about 4 or 5 years. I wrote my book is going to be made into a movie, and Kristen Davis and Bradley Cooper are going to play the lead roles. And I wrote that down. I have the books to prove it. So it is.
I believe you.
Powerful manifesting.
If you had the opportunity to sit down and have a 1-hour conversation with one woman, any woman in the world, who would it be and why?
Love this question. And I actually have a section in my book that I explain this because I think when we're younger, we will say a famous person or and of course, Oprah. We'd all love to talk to Oprah. But when we're older, we want something more because we've suffered that grief and loss. So, and with our grandparents, there's usually one that we resonate with more, yes, or we see more. And so my paternal grandmother is like a spirit angel for me. Like, she's a spirit guide, and mm-hmm, I feel connected with her, and I feel her energy. And I believe, I tell the story about how she brought Mark and I together, my husband. But I want to, again, we're talking about empowerment and voices. I want to speak to my other Nana, so my maternal grandmother, because I feel she didn't have a voice and I didn't get to know her as much. So I think that if I could have that time, because I feel she had a disability, a muscle degenerative disease, and she had a hard life, and obviously in the war times and things like that. But I feel that I never got to know her as much as I knew the other grandmother. So I would, mm-hmm, love to spend some time with her to feel her pain and where she's come from, and yeah, get to know, hear her voice. Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful. Mm. If you could go back and give your younger self one piece of advice, what would that piece of advice be?
Don't make it so hard for yourself.
We all do that.
Yes. I think that's what we realize too, is that we might blame other people or think that we're a victim of certain circumstances. But if we take responsibility and we get to the point where we're like, you know what, I have made it hardest on myself. It's our thoughts and own limiting beliefs that really stop us from doing a lot of things in our life. So if I could go back and say, just don't be so hard on yourself. And yeah, that's how I'd say it.
Yeah, we are our own worst critics. We are our biggest hurdles. It's unbelievable what we do to ourselves.
It really, yeah, and again, and repetitive, the same thing, just snap out of it.
Yeah, wake up.
I know. We need the Joe Dispenza changing our brains. Yeah.
Yes. Mm. Lastly, Lisa, if you were to deliver your last 30-second speech to the world, your corner of the world, your tribe, your people, what would that last 30 seconds sound like? What words of wisdom would you impart?
I would say that you're not alone and that you have a unique gift and you shouldn't have to live up to the expectations of everyone else and just follow your own path. And don't listen so much to what other people think about you and spend that time on self-love and your own transformation and growth. And everything that you need is within you.
Beautifully said. Wonderful way to end the interview. Lisa, thank you so much for being here with me today, for taking and making the time to share a little bit about your story, your journey, and the beautiful light you're putting out into the world through the work you do. I am so grateful to be connected to you and to have you as a member of the Empowerography community. Thank you for all that you're doing. And I'm so grateful.
Thank you so much, Brad. That's beautiful. It's my pleasure to be here. It's been an amazing conversation, and I'm just blessed to be able to be on your podcast. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, and I love the work you're doing as well. I really appreciate that you are doing this for women and you are making a difference.
Thank you. That means a lot to me. Thank you for that reflection. I receive that and take that in. So thank you for that. Once again, my name is Brad Walsh, host of your Empowerography podcast. Today, my guest has been Lisa Benson. She is an award-winning author who also helps women find their voice. Thank you so much, Lisa. I hope you have a beautiful rest of your day.
My pleasure. Thank you, Brad.
Thank you very much for listening to this podcast. If you haven't yet, please be sure to subscribe, rate, review, and share with all your friends. You can find me at viseuphoria.ca and follow me on Instagram at Empowerography Podcast and on Facebook at Empowerography. Please join me next time for another inspirational story from yet another amazing woman.